The Lara Murphy Show, Episode 61.
Welcome to The Lara Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Lara Murphy Show. I am one half of your hosts, Bob Murphy. With me, as usual, is Carlos Lara. Carlos, how are things in Nashville?
Hi, Bob. I'm doing good.
I am, folks, in an undisclosed location in Chicago, and I'll just leave it at that. We like to keep the audience guessing, Carlos, but that's where I am in case my audio sounds different from usual. And before we jump into the topic today, why don't we tell folks what we're doing? So Saturday, October 13th, 2018, we have our next IBC seminar for the general public that we're putting on. It's going to be in Fort Worth, Texas. And if you want further details, you go to ibcseminar.com. So again, that's going to be Saturday, October 13th. And what this is, in case you're a new listener, Carlos and I have a seminar. We do it with David Stearns, comes and helps us put the show on. It is a 4 hours? Is that the right length,
Carlos? That's correct, 4 hours.
Yeah, it's a four-hour seminar. You know, there's breaks, obviously, in there. And it's on Austrian economics. We talk about the state of the economy and what IBC is, and then how you, as either a household or a business owner, can start implementing IBC in your life in order to serve as the ideal cash flow management system to help protect yourself from these problems that we're going to outline, you know, earlier in the seminar in terms of look at what the Federal Reserve and the banking system, the situation they're in. So it doesn't assume any background knowledge, so don't feel like you have to do a bunch of studying. If you're in the Fort Worth area in particular and you can get away on Saturday, October 13th, if you're a listener to this podcast, I think you would definitely enjoy this seminar. Let me also say, in case you're thinking you're an old veteran at this, there's stuff we get into. If we have you for 4 hours, we can get into a lot of details and nuances that we can't get into in a podcast. So I'll say that as well. If you want to get a sense of what do we cover, to think about it, gee, do I want to give up 4 hours on a Saturday? The new book we have out with Nelson Nash called The Case for IBC, that covers a lot of the material, but not the stuff about Austrian economics, right? So The Case for IBC is the new book. You go to thecaseforibc.com to get yourself a copy of that. That covers the life insurance and IBC aspect. But again, there's stuff in this seminar we go over that really, you say, where else can I get that? You can't. You got to go to the seminar. So again, that's Saturday, October 13th in Fort Worth, Texas. All those details and registration is at ibcseminar.com.
Hey, Bob, I want to say something about that particular seminar because, you know, that's my old stomping grounds, that Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's a lot of people there, and I'm really looking forward to that seminar. Just to re-mention again what Bob is trying to tell everybody, that this is for the general public. If you're a financial professional and an agent, you're not invited, okay? This is just for the general public. So if you're a member of the public, as well as business owners, or anyone that's really interested in what is written in The Case for IBC and IBC in general and how it works, this is a seminar for you. Looking forward to seeing a lot of you there.
Right. So is that where you grew up?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, very, very close there to where the big Dallas-Fort Worth airport is. And I don't get often to that area like I used to because, as I said, I grew up there, but I am looking forward to being there and revisiting a lot of old acquaintances that I have there.
Yes, and so for all those of you listening, again, you don't want to miss that. Saturday, October 13th. I suppose while we're sitting here pushing stuff, why don't we also just mention, make sure we don't forget, we mentioned this a few episodes back, and we have gotten a nice response. Many of you have been contacting us. So just to refresh your memories in case you missed it or if you heard it and forgot, we have a new feature available where if you want to schedule individual consultations with Carlos for me, you can do that. And so you just go to our website. So the website's laramurphy.com. So that's laramurphy.com. So that's the URL. And then on the far right of the main header tab, there's a contact button. You click that. You know, you can send just little emails to us or what have you, but there's also a button there that you can formally schedule a consultation with us, either by phone or Skype. If you want to, you know, get into an in-depth discussion about IBC or Austrian economics, what have you. So many of you have been taking advantage of that, and we've enjoyed all those conversations and just want to remind our listeners that that's available as well. So what are we talking about today now that we're here in episode 61? Partly because of that feedback and just some of the general emails we've been getting, we realize that sometimes perhaps we get too deep in the weeds in this stuff, and that sometimes maybe it's appropriate to take a step back and just give the big picture. And so I thought perhaps in this episode, what we would do is just explain some of the stumbling blocks or some of the things that we had to puzzle over when Carlos and I respectively got into IBC in the beginning, because we've mentioned, I'm sure, several times in the course of this podcast that it didn't click for us right away. That, you know, my story is that when Carlos gave me Nelson's book and I read it and I thought, oh yeah, this is a great guy. You'd love to have a beer with him or something. But you know what? There's seven things wrong with this book, referring to Becoming Your Own Banker. And then the more I studied and so forth, then after a while, I was like, all right, I see what he meant on that one point. Okay, there's six things wrong with this. And the more I studied, is, oh, actually, I didn't understand how that worked with policy loans. Okay, three things wrong, two things wrong. And finally, at the end of it, I was like, man, this is so obvious. This is common sense. How come everyone's not doing this? Right. And so that you see the irony there, and I'm trying to be funny, that when you don't know how whole life works, for example, that's obviously a stumbling block, or you misunderstand what Nelson's trying to say. And then after you see it, it's crystal clear and there's nothing magical about it. And it's funny that sometimes when I've encountered skeptics in the beginning, they'll say, oh yeah, that's all hocus pocus and it's all magic. And then I explain how it works and then they'll go, oh yeah, well that's no big deal. Everybody knows that. And they walk away, but they're still not doing IBC. So I've seen, that spectrum of reaction as well, sometimes within the same person. So anyway, that's what we're talking about in this episode. So I will, I'll turn the mic over to you, Carlos. Do you want to share with people an example of something, one of the things that was tripping you up early on?
Well, what you're saying is absolutely true. I don't know why exactly. I do know why. It's that we are so used to hearing a lot of financial information out there that actually prevents us from being able to see, the concept, the IBC concept, because it's so completely different from that. Just to give you some idea what I'm talking about, first of all, IBC, is not an investment. And I just got through talking to someone that was a financial professional who was very interested in maybe becoming, a graduate of our course, and he was wanting to introduce it to his clients as another asset class. And so, no, it's not an investment. It's basically more of your own personal, and I say personal because we always want to own the insurance policy yourself, your own personal cash flow system. So you're actually building up a pool of money in the system, and then you can actually go into that pool of money and take money from there to investing things, whatever you want to invest into. Now, I'm saying that because it's not that we're completely against the stock market. We're not completely against real estate or gold or any of the other different type of investments you could get into, but we're simply saying all of your wealth should reside in the IBC policy, And then you deploy your money from there to make the kind of investments you want. So that's just one example. See, I didn't understand that. I couldn't understand that. And it's only because I really didn't have a good handle on what a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy was. Here's another one. It's not about interest rates. This one, everybody trips over this one because it's not around about interest rates. And that is because we're so used to calculating things on the rate of return. You know, you're going to get into something, you want to know what the rate of return is. And that's a bad pitfall to get into, but it's a very easy pitfall to get into because that's how we all think. Now, another thing that trips people up, and that is that you can actually dip into the cash that's in these policies, these IBC policies, by way of a policy loan, you see. And so you have to become very acquainted and very familiar with how these policy loans work. And of course, I didn't know anything about that, neither did Bob. And so you have all these features in this cash flow instrument, if you want to call it, that most of us have a very difficult time, you know, putting all together. And even today, I hear of people that say they understand IBC. They've read Nelson's book, and they know exactly what is being talked about, and they know exactly how to design one of these policies, and they really don't. And I'll tell you this up front right now. It took me 4 years to get the concept. And I'm a financial guy. And I've got four decades of experience in working in finance and working with businesses in finance. It took me 4 years to get this concept. And it's all because I've been inundated by the wrong kind of financial information that has prevented me from understanding IBC correctly. So I'll stop there, Bob, but that's the point. That's one of the reasons why we're having this little podcast is that, you know, be patient with yourself, do the homework and make sure you understand, you know, what IBC really is.
Can I just mention, Carlos, too, because this is something I didn't realize about you until sort of long into our relationship, that it's when you say you were trained, you know, you don't just mean that sort of like as an offhand remark, that you had licenses and so forth and all these financial products and industries, but also beyond that, what was your deal? You were like you taught classes on credit or something like that?
Yeah, back in the 80s, I actually taught credit classes. Yeah, to credit executives, a lot of with bankers as well. Credit basically is banking, all right? So I talk credit. I knew all about credit. and yes, I did have all of the required licenses that, you know, like a lot of the securities people get. In fact, I was a member of the National Association of Securities Dealers at one time. But it was mostly for capital formation, to raise capital for a lot of the business workouts that I was involved in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure the listeners realize when you were saying, you know, yeah, I'm coming out of this, mainstream paradigm and that you literally were teaching classes on credit. And so this isn't just that you meant you watched, you know, you read the Wall Street Journal or something, you were drinking the right. Kool-Aid. Like, you mean literally you were teaching classes, you know, in an area that one would have thought you would have absorbed IBC in 2 weeks because, oh, you're a trained expert in this stuff. So
Right. But it had a lot to do with the fact that we think we understand insurance and life insurance, but we really don't. I really didn't. And I knew what it was, and I knew the basic mechanics of it. And what I understood less about was dividend-paying whole life and mutual companies. But what Nelson discovered is actually brilliant because even though he refers to it as banking, he basically, the way I see it, he's discovered the ideal cash flow system that's an alternative to the number one cash flow system that we all use, which is the commercial banking system.
Right. So this is a, these are truisms we're saying here, but again, we thought, why don't we just make sure we reiterate some of these basic points about IBC. So what Nelson did is he just had an epiphany, you know, and Nelson's a religious guy, so he would say, you know, it's not him. But he realized this very old, boring, conventional financial product, namely a dividend-paying whole life policy, preferably issued by a mutual company. He realized that, you know, and everybody knew that you could do things like borrow against it. You could take out policy loans, like, oh, your daughter's getting married. Like, they knew that people, you know, a standard life insurance representative could have explained the attributes of this thing to try to get you to get one of them. They would have said, oh, yeah, if you want to, you never need cash, you can borrow against it. It's a real handy little thing. But Nelson realized this isn't just for some one-off event, like every 15 years when all of a sudden you need a lot of money. He realized this, like as Carlos said, is the ideal cash flow management system, that this should be your bank, in quotation marks. It's not literally, you know, in terms of the statutory definition, it's not a bank in that sense, but it's a way for you to manage your cash flows. And so thus, if it gets big enough to displace the role that a conventional commercial bank plays in your financial picture. So that's what Nelson came up with. And so it's, and that's why earlier too, like when I was saying, sometimes when you try to explain it to people, they think, oh, that's magic. It's too good to be true. No, I can't do that. And then when you finally get them to see, no, this is what Nelson's saying. Your objections that this won't work are wrong. And let me show you what. And then after a while, if they sit there and listen to you and you can knock down all the objections, then they'll go back to saying, oh, well, this is nothing special. Yeah. Everybody knows you can borrow out of those things. Sure. You know, it's, so it's funny. It's a two-pronged thing that on the one hand, Nelson's not inventing some crazy new derivative that's involving, you know, a synthetic put option or something, like, you know, is that some crazy newfangled thing? But on the other hand, it's like he realized what you could do with one of these things and how much versatility and independence it would give you.
We've spoken and written so much about, you know, the life insurance sector, and even to our own amazement, as we went and visited with life insurance companies, and before we wrote our first book, How Privatized Banking Really Works. I mean, we didn't know any of that stuff before, but we've come to realize this is a very old financial instrument. In fact, it's the primary financial instrument of the life insurance business as a whole. And another thing about Nelson is that, you know, Nelson's 87 years old. You know, his type, you don't see around much today. And he was in the life insurance business for well over 35 years, but way, way back. And he was very familiar with this product, and he knew that it had taken people going through the Great Depression, you know, to safety. I mean, this is what people before 1960, this is what they had. This is what they used in order to save money and, you know, have ready cash available for them when they needed it. So these are things that men and ladies of Nelson's generation would know. But we have a new generation now, and so a lot of the people that are in the business don't know these things about dividend paying whole life. And so this epiphany that you spoke about, Bob, I mean, even though Nelson was in the business, you know, it had to come to him as an epiphany because all along he was basically selling life insurance and didn't realize until that epiphany hit him that this was the perfect banking system.
Right. And I guess going along with that, I would say to our listeners that that was my main stumbling block. You know, going back to what Carlos was saying earlier, is that I really didn't understand how whole life insurance worked. I mean, in terms of the most basic level, I've told this story a lot, that the first time I sat down and watched the movie It's a Wonderful Life, you know, because growing up, I would see little clips of it here and there. I knew of the movie, but actually it was a while before I actually sat down to watch the thing. Early on in the movie, when, what's his name, George Bailey gets in financial trouble, he goes to the local rich guy and holds out, and he goes, well, I got a life insurance policy, you know, and the guy looks at it, and that's not good enough. But I remember being utterly confused watching that scene because I didn't understand why would a life insurance contract gain you any sort of liquidity or wealth right now? That made no sense to me. That would be like if he pulled out the fire insurance policy on his house and said, here, what can I get for this? You know, and I'd be like, what are you talking about? It just, if something bad happens, they make you whole, but it's not worth anything. What do you mean? So, and that's obviously because I was thinking of it in terms of a term life policy. And as Carlos is saying, especially people my age or younger, we barely know, you know, nobody talks about what permanent life insurance is. Whereas people growing up, certainly people who came of age before the 60s, to them, it was standard. One of the ways you might save as a regular household was in life insurance. And so that wouldn't have been unusual of those people to think that, oh yeah, like what are your assets right now, to say, oh, I've got, well, this life insurance policy and da-da-da-da, you know. So that's just a difference. And so if that is describing you and you realize, yeah, I don't really know how these things work, that's of course going to be a huge stumbling block, because you need to know, what's the cash surrender value? What does that even mean? And you need to understand, well, then what's a policy loan? And so that's why in the book, The Case for IBC, we sketch the problem, then we explain a little bit about what the solution is going to be. But then early on, I think it's in chapter 3, we do this, we go through the mechanics of whole life policies and just explain the basic nuts and bolts, how they work, what they mean. We also explain how to read a policy illustration. Because that's something, when I first encountered Nelson's book, it was a black box to me. He'd have tables in there showing, you know, the death benefit of the cash value by age 67. And I didn't even really know what those terms meant. I mean, I could I had a basic idea of what the death benefit meant and so on, but I didn't understand, for example, why would the death benefit change over time? Because I was thinking in terms of a term policy. Oh, you get $1 million term policy. The death benefit just stays the same while you keep making your premium payments. You know, why would the death benefit? So things like that, we explain the mechanics of what's happening to end your suspense in case I'm describing you and you don't really get that. When the death benefit's going up in one of these whole life policy illustrations, it's because you're buying more paid up insurance, either because your dividends are, you've instructed the insurance company to not take the dividends out in cash to give it to you, but instead to roll them back in and buy more life insurance. And so the death benefit coverage keeps getting bumped up when you do that. Or you yourself, you know, there's features available by which you can, part of what you're paying out of pocket into the policy is not just the premium and what's called the base policy, but it's also supplemented by what's called paid up additions or PUA. And there's a special rider you can get. And that allows you to instantly, with that payment, you're getting more paid up life insurance coverage. And so that's why the death benefit in the illustration goes up when you do that. So these are all, you know, nuances and things, but it's not just complexity for the sake of complexity. This is how IBC really works. And this ties into, you know, another misconception you've mentioned, Carlos, where a lot of people, they see stuff on the internet or they're just walking around. They think, oh yeah, with a whole life policy, you have to put money in for like the first 3 years before you're allowed to even borrow any against it, right? And of course, no, not if you set the thing up right using these PUA riders and you do it the IBC way. So that's just another example of how people's understanding of how whole life works is woefully inadequate. And that's part of the reason they don't get what Nelson's saying, is because they don't know what these things can do.
Exactly. Exactly. You're bringing up something very important here, and that's the illustrations. And I'm speaking to not just members of the general public now, but also financial professionals that may be listening to this podcast, because you may want to learn about the IBC Practitioner Program for financial professionals, and you know, find out more about that. You go to the NelsonNashInstitute.com and look for the tab that'll take you to the, you know, financial professionals, or you can go to our website, LauraMurphy.com, and you'll see a bar there on the right, a yellow box. And if you're a financial professional, you hit that box and it'll take you to a page that describes the course that Bob and I and Nelson created for these financial professionals. Because you see, Bob and I and Nelson and David, we do not sell life insurance. We depend on our graduates to be able to put the general public or business owners or whoever is interested in these policies together. And so what I'm leading up to talk about right now is the illustration. At some point, you're going to want to look at an illustration that's done on your particular finances. And what you're going to be thinking about is that how much excess cash flow do I have now to get one of these policies started? And that's going to vary, you know, person to person. So if you're just starting out in life and maybe you don't have a lot of excess cash flow to work with, obviously you're just going to start doing monthly payments in, and you can do it for a couple hundred bucks a month. Now, there's going to be individuals out there who will want to put up several million dollars into one of these policies, that they have money elsewhere, and then maybe they've sold off an asset, they have this available money, and now they want to fund a policy. Well, you can do that. And as we keep saying, you're going to need to have a specially designed policy to accommodate either the small amounts or the large amounts. Bob was talking about certain aspects of the policy, the base part of the policy, the PUA rider part of the policy. Sometimes they have term riders on them, they're all there because they're going to accommodate the kind of money you're going to put into the policy. But it's all directed to being able to give you access to cash within the very first year, which is basically the emphasis of the IBC concept, because you will be borrowing money from the policy, cash value. So that illustration, at some point, you know, you want to look at one for yourself. And this is why you would go to one of our authorized IBC practitioners for them to do an illustration for you. Doesn't mean you're buying it, but the illustration lays out a projection, in a sense, of the kind of money you're going to fund this thing with. And it gives you an opportunity to think through, you know, what you're looking at. What Bob and I try to do is give you as many resources as we can for you to become familiar with what we're talking about, whether it's the Laura Murphy Report that you can subscribe to, where we've written years of information on the life insurance industry itself, these policy loans. There's a lot of history there. All this information will help you in your education. Then we've got all these podcasts that you can listen to that give you that much more information. And you'll need that before you actually want to sit down with a financial professional. And then once you make that decision, then we want you to be placed in the hands of competent professionals that have gone through this course that Nelson Nash, myself, and Bob have designed. So this is going to get you to look at an illustration, and you need to become familiar with that illustration and understand how it works so that you can develop that comfort level, you know, make IBC work for you in your life.
Yeah, just to whet everyone's appetite, in case you're listening and all you've been doing is perhaps casually consuming some of these podcast episodes as the titles intrigue you, what you can do is, I believe it's episode 51 of the Laura Murphy Show, where we're covering, you know, we had a whole series, like mini series, if you will, where we went through and covered the case for IBC, our new book, chapter by chapter. And so I think episode 51 is where we cover the chapter that explained how to read a policy illustration. So if you want to, you know, hear us talk a little bit more about that, you can go ahead and look at that. But there's really no substitute. I strongly encourage you, just go ahead and get the case for IBC. It's a slender volume, in case you haven't realized that. It's not this huge tome that's going to take you 6 months to digest, where we can just, because you have to kind of see a policy illustration in front of you for someone to walk you through it. So we really can't do too much here verbally on the podcast. You need to be looking at something and have text and be able to analyze it at your own pace. So again, I think it's episode 51 is where we get into, you know, the closest we're going to get to on the air here telling you how to read a policy illustration. I suppose, Carlos, another thing that occurs to me is where I'm just trying to think of things that were stumbling blocks or things that at least helped me move me along, as I remember my first think tank that I went to. So in the IBC world, the the think tank is the periodic sort of like trade group meeting, if you will, of IBC financial professionals, the meeting where they present and, you know, give feedback to each other and network and so on. And so I went to one of those things early on in my exposure to IBC, and I saw a presentation by a guy, I think he was a CPA, and he was explaining, you know, and what I liked about it is he was very anal and was saying how, you know, hey, you know, I've some of my clients, you know, that if they get audited and they've been doing IBC, they're fine, you know, because I make sure they got all their ducks in a row. So that reassured me just as an outsider, because again, you hear this stuff and you wonder, gee, is this legitimate? Is the government okay with this? Did it? And so, yeah, if you do the thing properly, there's nothing mysterious going on here. It's fine. And so let me just relay the one thing that he pointed out in terms of, you know, best practices. He was saying, look, if you own a business, and remember, folks, as we talked about even just last episode, if you're a business owner, generally speaking, the way you're going to do this is you personally are going to be the owner of the whole life policy. And then when your business needs cash, you're going to first turn to your personal policy. And so the way it would work out in practice is your business is borrowing money from you. And the way you're getting your hands on the cash is you're taking out a policy loan on your personal policy. So you personally are lending money to your business. And then, so if you're going to do it that way, of course, your business owes you interest payments on the loan, and those are deductible business expenses from the business's point of view. And that's fine. You go ahead and do that. But then this guy's point was that you want to do the mirror image. If you're when you do your taxes for your business, showing those outgoing interest payments as deductible business expenses that are reducing the taxable income, you know, like reducing the net income of your business, then you as the individual who are receiving those interest payments, you have to say that that's part of your income when you're listing your sources of income for your personal taxes. So just little things like that, just to make sure everything is, you know, the accounting is correct. And if your business has income or interest income going out, then, you know, you had to have it coming in the other end. So I'm just mentioning things like that reassured me as an outsider coming in and learning this culture or whatever to say, okay, yeah, that makes sense. There's nothing mysterious going on here. This isn't a scam. You're not trying to do anything that's going to be viewed askance or anything. That this is all perfectly straightforward once you understand what it is you're doing. So in terms of the actual concrete things that you're doing, there's nothing mysterious at all. You're taking out a very conservative financial product, namely a dividend paying whole life policy, and you're using policy loans as a way to manage cash flow. So that's pretty straightforward. There's nothing mysterious about it. You just want to keep good records and, you know, keep track of the stuff. And, but again, it's the epiphany of what Nelson realized was this simple thing, if you use it properly and incorporate it and just change the way you think, a phrase that Nelson uses a lot, it actually allows you to, quote, become your own banker, to gain financial independence and sort of wean yourself off of reliance on the commercial banking system. So I share that anecdote in case that reassures anybody or if that was something that was tripping people up. Because again, for whatever reason, when I saw that, it just kind of reassured, okay, yeah, this makes sense. They got a CPA up there who was real anal, just walking through how do you do this. So I was more confident that it all fit together and made sense.
Yeah, and then you're hitting on something very important here, and that's policy loans. Policy loans. I think most of us, when we hear that term policy loan, some of us may have a negative reaction to that because there's some of us, we don't like debt. I don't want to take any loans out, you know, that sort of thing. When I met Nelson Nash 15 years ago, I realized that he had almost $1 million in policy loans. He wasn't a bit worried either. And when he has windfalls, he would say, when I have windfalls, that's when you pay these policy loans off. And this really should strike a chord with business owners. Business owners understand windfalls. But the first time Nelson mentioned policy loans to me, it flew over my head. I didn't get the significance of that. But in order to practice IBC, you have to become very familiar with policy loans. And there's some special nuances about policy loans that we need to make sure we're well informed on. I will say this to you, that there's nothing mysterious about policy loans. They've been around since 1850 in the life insurance industry. They were actually created by one of the larger life insurance companies as an alternative to just surrendering the policy. You know, before that time, people are got all their cash in these policies. And if they ever got into a cash flow pinch, they had to surrender the policy in order to get to the cash. But this large life insurance company came up with the idea of the policy loan as a as an alternative to surrendering the policy. And over time, the policy loan has become a contractual right of participating or dividend-paying whole life policies. All dividend-paying whole life policies give the policy owner a contractual right to policy loans. And so the one main thing I want to say policy loans is so important is that the flexibility on these policy loans is unlike anything else in the financial world. To me, it's the best kept secret in America right now. The fact that the flexibility, the terms on these policy loans are unheard of. And this is really what helps IBC, you know, be such an intriguing concept because, especially when we're dealing with cash flows, to have that time to repay these policy loans from windfalls that we may have in the future. And Bobby, you may want to talk a little bit about more about those policy loans and how they are actually, you know, derived and how someone accesses a policy loans and, you know, what it means, you know, down the road in the future with for somebody that has a lot of policy loans on their contract.
Yeah, sure. So it's, again, folks, we're just trying to brainstorm with stuff. And I know that Carlos, I've seen him in more smaller settings where we're just talking to a few business owners and so forth that he has stressed that, you know, one of his initial misgivings or stumbling blocks was he was debt averse and, you know, and in general, yeah, I think it's probably good financial advice, you know, to certainly I'll tell my son if he's going to go off to college or something like, yeah, be real careful. You certainly don't want to get a bunch of introductory credit card offers and run up, you know, debt buying pizzas and whatever. But again, this is to know how you're doing it with IBC. There is a method to it. And we, in the case for IBC, for example, in the last chapter, we have a business owner who has irregular income, but expects to, they're going to be selling a piece of property or something down the road. And so they have a large influx of income, but they just don't know exactly when it's going to come in. And so there's a, you know, a situation of, well, gee, how do I'd like to take out a bigger policy so that I can get the thing up and running and I can wean myself off the dependence on the commercial bank. But on the other hand, I don't want to be locked. So the way we solve that problem involves a large policy loan, and it's an interesting application of it just to show you the flexibility and the power of IBC. And as Carlos is saying, Nelson Nash himself, at any given time, you know, especially when he was younger, when he was really, you know, had this thing up and running and had something like, what, 41 policies going, things like that, he would have lots of policy loans outstanding. And part of it was he needed a place to put windfalls, as he said. If he sells a piece of property or whatever, something comes in, he would pay down policy loans, and that's the way to do it. So there's, you know, if you long as long as you know what you're doing and you have a plan in mind and you know you have income coming in, you want a place to put it, you know, that all makes perfect sense. So we just stress that this is why we, you know, you need to set your policy up and to make your long-term plans while you're consulting with somebody who knows IBC and understands this stuff, because they need to know, you know, what the end game is. So again, we point people to the Finder, which is at infinitebanking.org/finder. Let me mention this one in particular example here of how, as we were saying earlier, people who don't really understand how whole life works, they misinterpret and they downplay the significance of Nelson's insight. So the particular example is somebody might say, oh, okay, I get a sense of how this IBC works. You're basically just building up an asset and then you borrow against it, with the asset being the collateral. You borrow from some third party and that's how you get access to cash. And okay, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, that makes sense on the face of it, but there's nothing special about life insurance. Why are you guys trying to get everyone that they have to do it with life insurance? I could do that with anything. For example, what if I have a house? You know, I got a house that's paid off. Let's say it's worth $300,000 market value. My daughter's getting married, I need a bunch of money. I'll just go to my local commercial bank and say, give me a home equity loan. So my house serves as collateral. You give me a big loan, and that's how I pay for the wedding. So there you go. So there I'm, quote, banking with my house. You don't need to, quote, bank with the dividend paying whole life policy. You guys are really just using this as a gimmick to sell life insurance, right? So that's a very plausible objection on the face of it. And I like that kind of objection because it does isolate, you know, the essence of what's going on with IBC. Sure, that's one way to think about it, that it's an asset that you're building up by living below your means, by capitalizing the verb that Nelson likes to use. That's fine. You know, you're not getting money for nothing. You have to save in order to be wealthier down the road. Yep. But why that criticism goes wrong is the person does not understand just how easy it is and the flexibility of taking out a loan from a life insurance company with your policy serving as the collateral as opposed to just about any other thing you can think of. So specifically in that example I went through, the difference is if you try to take out a home equity loan to pay for your daughter's wedding, for example, the commercial banker is going to say to you, okay, what are you using it for? Okay, what's your income? Let me check your credit. Let's see what other assets you have. Okay, let me see what other debts you might be carrying. Okay, when are you going to pay this loan back? You know, and then if you miss a payment, you know, you're supposed to pay it back over whatever 3 years, right? You miss a payment or two, the banker's going to get very upset, right? And so why is that? Whereas with the life insurance, you know, the policy loan, none of that happens. You don't have to tell them what you just call them up. You say, yeah, what's my available cash right now? They tell you, and you just tell them how much you want. And, you know, that will be in your account maybe 2 business days later, something like that. So why is that? Why don't they run your credit and so forth? Why don't they check your income? It's because the nature of the collateral is so different. With the life insurance company, what's happening is the cash surrender value is the collateral. And so they got the policy loan. They're lending you money on the side. They're not taking it out of your policy. The policy is chugging along, doing what it does. On the side, they're lending you money that's rolling over at interest with your policy as the collateral. And so even if you never service that loan, they know you're good for it because they themselves are guaranteeing the collateral. And so the way they get paid back is that whenever they owe you money contractually because of the policy, either because you surrender it or because you die or whoever the, you know, insured person is dies, the money that's going out the door of the insurance company, they first pay themselves the outstanding policy loan that's been rolling over in interest. And then the net remainder just goes, you know, to the proper recipient or recipients. So that's how the life insurance company gets paid back. So the hassle is they have to engage in a subtraction problem. That's how they get paid back. So that's no problem. Whereas consider a commercial bank. If you took out a home equity loan to pay for your daughter's wedding and then you just never paid them back and you went into default, ultimately, they're going to have to kick you out of your house and sell the house. That's how they're going to get paid back. And so just think of what a hassle that is. That's not a quick and easy operation. For one thing, the real estate market could have crashed. You might not have taken care of your house. All right. So you can see, and just, it's not a quick process to get, you know, when you say the house is worth $300,000, what that means is if you properly stage it, you market it, you maybe wait for the right season. So it's a long, laborious process to turn a house into $300,000 of cash, even if you think that's, quote, what it's worth. Whereas, again, your cash surrender value, which is the collateral on your policy loan from a life insurance company, that's a very liquid thing. And again, they're paying you at some point anyway, and they're just turning some of that money around to pay themselves the loan back. So that's why it's such a different thing. But see, notice there, it took me 5 minutes just to explain that. And so if you didn't know that, if you didn't really understand what's going on, if you didn't understand how is it that a life insurance company makes policy loans and why are the terms so generous, you know, you really have to know a lot about the business model of mutual life insurance companies to understand even how a policy loan works and what the cash surrender value is before you can finally see, oh, so that's why when this guy Nelson Nash says you should, quote, bank, meaning engage in cash flow management using one of these policies, that makes way more sense. It gives you way more control and flexibility than using outside lenders. Why he's onto something there. You know, this isn't just some gimmick or something he came up with. So that's just one example. And I'm saying for me, what happened is I got more and more comfortable with IBC. It was things like that. Like I had all these objections up front. And then the more I learned about how dividend paying whole life insurance works, those objections just kept melting away.
Yeah, and I want to point out one very funny aspect of all of that, Bob, that you were just talking about. And again, it makes the point once more that be patient with yourself now. It takes time to fully grasp the concept of IBC. One of the things I've been trying to stress is that Bob and I have provided a lot of different resources that you can go to for more information about IBC, and these resources are concentrated on this one topic. So we've got the case for IBC, the book. You got how privatized banking really works. You have the podcast. You have the Laura Murphy report. These are all resources where you can become as familiar as you possibly can on the IBC subject. And as Bob mentioned, we've got this new feature now that if you want to talk to us to, you know, one-on-one, we have that particular feature on our website as well. But the funny thing was that when he learned how easy it was for a policy owner to access a policy loan, he became worried about the beneficiaries of these policies, you know, like the spouses or the business owners. And I would hear him tell audiences, now, if you're gonna start taking policy loans, you're gonna find out it's very easy to do, but you need to talk to your spouse about this, because if you were to die, she needs to understand that all these policy loans that you've taken out are going to be subtracted from the death benefit before that income tax-free death benefit comes to you. So it was sort of comical because Bob was seeing the ease in getting these policy loans versus what he was just describing, trying to get this a loan from outside lenders like a commercial bank or other finance companies. They have to take some sort of collateral from you. So these are the reasons that I say become as familiar as you can with the IBC concept, and hopefully you'll go to these resources to learn as much as you can.
Yeah, and you're right. It is funny how you see the things that were preoccupying your mind, because I do remember stressing that. And just for the benefit of our listeners, make sure you do understand that yes, if you had a policy that had a face death benefit of $1 million, and then you took out a $200,000 policy loan because you were going to start your new business, and then you got hit by a bus the next week, yeah, the point is your widow, assuming that I'm talking to the men in the audience here, your widow would get only $800,000 because the life insurance company would pay itself back the policy loan. And so my point, I think, is fine. You want to make sure nobody's surprised by that if they thought you had all this life insurance and death benefit coverage, that they wouldn't be shocked to get a smaller check. But the reason I haven't stressed that recently, or that really hasn't been bothering me or giving me angst at night, is that when you're doing IBC, what ends up happening, typically, at least the cases I've seen and certainly the illustrations we put in our materials, is that the person is so heavily in the life insurance that the death benefit, even the net death benefit, meaning that once policy loans are repaid and the net amount, the remainder that's going to the recipients, the beneficiaries named in the policy, is still a very big number. Okay, so yes, it is true. And obviously, in general, you want to have communication with your spouse about financial matters, just for the strength of the marriage, of course. But my point is that, yes, you need to understand that that's what's going on, so there's no surprises. But I think you'll typically see, for example, in the case for IBC, the hypothetical business owner, we go through the example in the last chapter. It, no matter where in the analysis you stop it, no matter when, if that business owner were to die, there is a huge check going to the beneficiary, even accounting for these large outstanding policy loans. So, make sure you realize the mechanics of it and how it works. It's not free money. The reason the life insurance company is lending it to you is because you know, they know they owe you money under these various circumstances. And so there it's a lien against that outcome or that contingency. But nonetheless, if you're practicing IABC, you're going to end up having a lot of life insurance either on yourself or other people in whom you have an insurable interest. And so I don't think that that's a particular – that doesn't concern me as much now as it used to when I first got into it, when I first learned the mechanics of it. And on that happy note, folks, why don't we wrap things up here? So obviously, you know, there's plenty of things that maybe in future episodes, Carlos and I can relay more of it. But what we're trying to get you to see here is if you're new to IABC and you have a lot of doubts, we don't want you to be discouraged because it is a new – I don't want to be cliched and use buzz terms, but it is a new paradigm. It's a new way of thinking about the financial world. And so, yes, we ourselves, and in fact, probably Carlos and my, our training was what tripped us up because we had this rigid framework with which we would analyze financial issues. And since Nelson was throwing us a curveball and coming at it from a different angle, at first we thought he was saying things that were demonstrably wrong. And then we realized, oh, wait a minute, that's not what he means. He's saying such and such. And we realize, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And then by the time you're done, it's sort of like, yeah, well, he's just saying obvious stuff. How come nobody else gets this? You know, so it is just kind of funny how it's hard to grasp the importance of a new idea when it's coming in perhaps vocabulary or terminology that you're not familiar with. But in any event, we encourage you certainly get a copy of our new book if you haven't already at thecaseforibc.com. And if you're in the Fort Worth area, on Saturday, October 13th, and this is 2018, we're going to be there putting on our IBC workshop for the general public or seminar for the general public. And the details for that are at ibcseminar.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
You've just finished another episode of The Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.